Welcome to Season 13 of the Follow My Lead Podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go! Welcome back. I am excited you're here, rolling right along here in Season 13. I get requests a lot about doing specific topics for shows, and one of the most requested items I get is around parenting and leading at home. And while when I asked Bob Teede to be on the show, who's our featured conversation this week, I didn't know we were going to go to parenting as much as we did, but it was one of the most powerful shows I've ever done. To give you an idea, I wrote notes for this episode, and I ended up with 4 pages worth of notes, things that I wanted to apply in my own leadership journey. So I know with 100% certainty, whether you're a parent right now or not, you are going to learn lessons in this episode that you will use your entire life, at home or at work. So without further ado, here is an incredible conversation with my friend, Bob Teede. Well, Bob, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, John.
When you think of your journey of helping develop leaders and helping, you know, create better human beings on this planet that are more servant oriented, what definition do you use of leadership? And what are some examples in your life that you look to or think to or look to mimic when you think about your own leadership style?
That's a profound question, and I don't know that I can nail it instantly or perfectly, but a few thoughts that come to mind is that a leader knows how to gather the resources to do what needs to be done, and John, you may be familiar with my blog, which is Leading with Questions. And part of those resources for an effective leader is that she or he knows who to ask. In other words, part of their expertise as a leader is knowing that they don't actually need to know all the answers. They just need to know some of the questions, because if they can ask, then they can find the path forward to anywhere. And so one of the big resources a leader knows how to bring to bear is the people resource. And those could be internal or external, meaning there's times where we say, I don't know this, but who might? And that person could be in the organization or outside. But then on inside of the organization, a leader is going to many times ask their staff, what do you think? And leverages the horsepower or the brain power of all the people on their team. So that's part of leadership. I think you asked another question.
Well, I mean, as you think of that description.
Yes.
Finding ways to get things done and then asking good questions and knowing who to ask. Who are some leaders in your life or examples that you look to that have done that really well?
Well, John, let me tell you another story. A number of years ago, I was attending the Willow Creek Global Leadership Conference. And Liz Wiseman was one of the speakers, and she was going to be speaking on the topic of multipliers, which is the name of her book, Multipliers. And I kind of walked into that session thinking, hey, this is going to be fun because, John, she's going to be speaking about leaders like me. And she started her talk with talking about diminishers. Diminishers was a term I had not heard before, and so she was defining a diminisher. She said, if you bring a diminisher a problem, they solve it for you. And as she explained that, I thought, well, that's what I do all the time, and I sank a little bit lower in my chair. And she said, if you bring a diminisher, an idea, they say, well, John, good idea, but you know, if you also did this, this, and this, it'd be just fantastic. And she said, that's what a diminisher did. And I thought, well, that's what I do all the time. But my self-perception is John brings me an idea and I say, wow, John, great idea. You know, if you would also add this and this, it'd be fantastic. And I thought as John left my office, John was smiling and thinking, wow, I'm so glad I brought that to Bob. He added such horsepower. I had no idea that John was actually leaving if he'd done this several times, thinking I'm never bringing Bob another idea. No matter what I ever share with him, it's never good enough. And again, I sank a little bit lower in my chair. And then she said, when a diminisher asks you to take on a project, they want you to have responsibility, but they don't give you authority. They ask you to help them rather than asking if you will actually lead and take it on, you know, with authority. And if you say yes, a diminisher says, well, sit down, let me give you the plan. And I thought, oh, my goodness. That's exactly how I've been leading. And so one of the changes as a result of that was to then understand that a multiplier, when you bring a multiplier problem, they say, John, how do you think you ought to solve that? In other words, they let the person with the problem solve it. When you bring a multiplier an idea, they say, wow, that's incredible, John. Tell me more. What are you going to do first? And they let you run with the idea. And when a multiplier gives you a new project, they actually, hey, would you be the director, the coordinator of this? They give you authority with the project. And then they say, they let you do the draft of the plan. They don't give you a plan. They let you do the draft. And so those are a number of changes that I've made. And that we now, in our leadership development programs that we share, so that we are creating leaders who are multipliers, not diminishers.
I absolutely love the story. And I think anybody listening can probably put themselves in those shoes at different times in their career. I want to push back on you in one area in terms of, when someone doesn't appear to have the ideas or isn't confident enough in themselves to have the answers and you sense that they really need help, what's the best way to go about handling that when they don't think they have the answers inside or and to be candid, they might not?
Well, John, that, again, a great question, and it does take wisdom, and you know, it's an art and not a science.
Mm-hmm.
We're always learning, and no two people are exactly the same, but there is a time in each of our lives, so there's a time in the lives of our staff in which they do need mentoring. In other words, they've never done it before. And so they actually need someone to show them. And I mean, another like simple thing, I'm sure, John, you've heard this before, but it's watch one, do one, teach one. And in a mentoring kind of relationship, it could be, hey, John, we're going on this sales call. I want you to ride along and I just want you to watch me. And then we'll debrief afterwards. And then we go out again later. Now, there could be several watch me's, but at some point it's like, okay, John, you're going to do this one. I'm going to watch you. So now you're actually doing it. Now, especially if I lay out way in advance, John, the process is going to be you're going to watch me, then you're going to do it, and I'm going to watch you. And then third, you're going to teach someone else and replicate this process. Well, John watches with a whole lot more interest and intensity, knowing that a week from now or 2 weeks from now, after I've watched two or three of these, I'm going to have to do it versus Bob just entertaining me here. And so there's a process. And I'm saying, but sometimes we actually do need to watch someone do something. Or if we're leading somebody, we need to let them watch us do something so that we are feeding in that information. And but there reaches a point, John, there's, I guess I've learned this through time. Because I've had success by climbing the mountain on this route, I tend to advise, hey, John, you ought to climb it just like I did. Hmm. Well, you may have a completely different set of strengths. And I do at times need to give you freedom to say, John, do you see where we're going? In other words, the destination is still the top of the mountain. And you say, yep, Bob, crystal clear. John, you've seen how I've climbed it, but what would be the best way for you to climb it using your strengths and giving you freedom to deviate from my route and leverage your strengths? And so, again, it's that art of giving input, giving directions, showing somebody how to do something, then letting them do it, letting them teach others. But ultimately, giving them freedom, if they know where the destination is, giving them freedom to use their unique strengths and talents to climb that mountain a bit differently than I do, rather than insisting my route is the only route anyone can use. So, right. Does that make sense, John?
Absolutely. And I think it's a great example. And so often we want to teach, we want to share exactly how we did and expect the same thing.
Yep.
You come off to me as just an incredible relationship builder. And like, you know, I think the quote, I think from one of your old partners was, rules without relationships lead to rebellion. And I know he's referring to parenting there, and maybe we can go to parenting or work related. What does that sentence mean to you? Rules without relationships lead to rebellion?
Well, John, that sentence, that quote has been so helpful in my life, in my parenting, and in my leadership. And I know that, you know, there's times as a parent that the child is hasn't made a good decision. They're acting out. They're doing something that's wrong. And we just have this propensity to then want to really push on the rules. My son's name was Bill. Bill, you know the house rule here. You know our family rule. You know you cannot do that. And you're just really pounding him. And I'm talking more, I mean, it could happen at any age. There'd be applicable. But, you know, when they start acting out in middle school and in high school years, you know, it's pretty significant, and we're just wanting to really pound the rule. And my colleague said many times that's a time to, it's not that we forget the rule, but it's time to push on the relationship. Mm. And when we push on the relationship, in other words, demonstrate Dad loves you. And yes, those need to be words, but also with actions, with caring, with conversation, with understanding, the rule problem actually solves itself. Or out of relationship, you know, if you know I love you and you feel love, John, then I can remind you of the rule. We can talk about it. But usually then in that conversation, it's not a heated dad is angry kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. It's because Dad loves you and wants best for you and wants you to make wise decisions. Son, we need to visit about this. And so it's that kind of thing. And there's so much that could be applied there.
I want to go to one thing specifically, which I think, you know, for a lot of our audience, either as organizational leaders and or as parents at home, I think many of them are both. How does one go about building stronger relationships? Let's start at work. So that those rules that they apply, or as we would talk about in the Welder Leader Program, the standards for an individual to choose, what are some ways for a leader to go about building stronger relationships at work? And then the second question on top of that is, how do you go about building stronger relationships with your kids?
I'm so glad you asked that question, John. Can I share a quote that I have on my wall here?
I would absolutely love for you to.
It's by David Augsburger. And he writes, here's the quote, "Being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, they are almost indistinguishable." I'll say it again. Being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, they are almost indistinguishable. And I share that to say, in building relationships, and again, my blog, leadingwithquestions.com, this won't come as a surprise to you, but we build relationships by being more interested than interesting. We build relationships by asking questions and then actually leaning in to listen and to listen to understand. And so you and I chatted earlier. We're both fans of Patrick Lencioni. In his book, Four Signs of a Miserable Job, he said one of those signs was being unknown. And to work at a place where, other than knowing your first name, your boss, your colleagues, they don't really know you. They don't know about your family. They don't know what you like to do. They don't know any, you know, joys of your life or challenges of your life. And you feel unknown. And so when you have a boss who says, "John, tell me your story." Or another one of my friends, Cheryl Batchelder, former CEO of Popeye's Chicken, she wrote a book, and in that book, she asked this question. It's become one of my favorite questions. She says, "How well do you know your employees? Do you know the three or four events that have most shaped their lives?" And John, that's a question I love to ask staff. You know, John, what are the three or four questions that have most shaped your life? And then listen. And the thing is, by asking and listening and remembering, that's where that person is going to feel heard and feel loved, and the relationship gets deeper. It's not the boss sharing all the great things he or she has done, and in a sense, you know, giving a verbal resume of all your wonderful accomplishments, thinking, "Well, they'll be so impressed and so glad I'm their boss." Strangely enough, that doesn't work. Now, with our kids, you know, we may not say the question, three or four things that have most shaped your life, but it is asking them thoughtful questions. It's listening to them. You know, sometimes kids, John, we would like to schedule when we spend time with them and when they ought to talk to us or visit with us. And, you know, I found that my kids became most talkative when it was time for them to be in bed. And in other words, to stay up longer, they were suddenly very verbal.
Yeah, they suddenly wanted to spend time with Dad.
Yes. Well, allowing that, you know, being in their bedroom and sitting on their bed and just letting them talk is another time to deepen that relationship. And instead of, "Hey, it's time to go to bed, it's time, you know, you need to be quiet and go to bed," they're just times, "Hey, you know, tell me more about that."
Bob, I gotta interrupt you, but I want to ask you something. Your kids are now grown, youngest 31, about to be married, will be the fourth one to get married. How often do you think about those times sitting on your children's beds and having those dialogues? Do you Do you miss those times?
Wow, John, you've just created an emotion within me. I could get teared up. John, when I remember when we brought our son home, Bill, he's 45, but I remember we brought him home. He was a bit colicky. And here I am, a new dad, first child, a son. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, how will I ever get through this? And, in a blink of the eye, and he's leaving for the University of Texas, and another blink, and he's 45, and his oldest graduated from high school. Time just goes so fast. And so, one of my parenting tips is always do it now. Do it now.
I love that.
A child, we say to a child, the child says, we talk about going fishing, and we say, well, son, yeah, someday we'll go fishing. The child gets up the next morning thinking, today's probably the day. and it ought to be.
Can I, Bob, can I have one exception to your do it now rule?
Please.
Take them to Disney World? Can that be an exception?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Meaning, it doesn't have to be today, but if that's a place they would love to go, or wherever it is, to schedule that for the next vacation, the next year. But of course, John, and probably the reason you were bringing that one up is I think a lot of times as dads, we tend to think, well, I took the kid to Disney World. What do they have to complain about? And they actually need a dad and a mom in their life every day. And the key to successful parenting is not do the Disney World thing once a year or the mountains or the beach or, and I'm not saying don't do that, but don't box that you've done your job as a parent because you did the big thing every year. We really do our job as parents by the relationship building every day. And I realize, some of us travel, but even then, the call to the child, today we've got Skype and FaceTime, and we really can stay connected even face-to-face, even when we travel. Those kind of things are just so important. John, my former colleague, he tells this story that his son's about 2 years old at this time, and he's writing a book, and the son comes in and says, play ball? And he said, son, dad's busy right now. He's writing a book. And son says, okay. And, he goes out, and about 60 seconds later, wife comes in and says, mister, we need to talk. And he said, those are not good words. And she said, honey, you are always going to have a book to write, but you're not always going to have a son who wants to play ball with you. And if you'll take time to play ball with him now, he'll take time with you when he's 30. And my colleague did two things that day. He got down on his knees and asked the Lord for help. And got up off and went and played ball. And there's another scene he likes to tell. His son played college ball, and he in California. He lived in Texas, but he got to a lot of those games. And one of those games, he got there. He got there, while maybe the women were playing and before the varsity took the court. And his son was sitting opposite on the other side, up on the bleachers, opposite kitty corner from where the entrance was. But his son saw his dad was there, was surprised, immediately get out of his seat, and in a fast walk, they ended up meeting at half court on the sideline, and the son threw his arms around his dad. And he always said, I was reminded in that moment of the wisdom of my wife saying, if you'll play ball with your two-year-old when he wants to play ball and not say, daddy's too busy, he'll then you know, talk to you. And again, at that time, he wasn't 30, but,
right.
but much, much later. And, you know, a lot of times in a relationship building, you know, I've heard this, you might have heard this, maybe it's a proverbial story, but the dad who says, well, man, I've tried to get my son to do things with me or for us to do things together. I invite him to go golfing with me every Saturday morning, and he doesn't want to go.
Yeah.
Well, dads, if that's your experience, it's finding out what does the six-year-old son want to do. And then doing that, it's probably not going to be the thing that you want to do, but if you'll do what he wants to do, that will build the relationship. And again, those things will change as he gets older. John, maybe you were the six-year-old because you were a professional golfer whose dad played golf, and you actually did want to go with him at six.
Yeah, that finding that balance of, you know, direction and is tough. Particularly today, because, you know, with the technology and the video games and the internet and YouTube and, you know, every kid's different, but there's a balance of finding what they want to do if it's playing a video game with them or around them, if it's not, you know, something active or outside. There's a balance there, and I think today's parents and today's leaders, even in companies, are forced to face different things. The ideas and the principles remain the same, but they're just different pressures and different things that people face today that maybe your prior generation didn't have to face, per se. They're different. I know you've been so gracious with your time today. I want to end on this question, and that is, you get to give one bit of advice to our audience about, you know, things you've learned in your life. What is that one bit of advice?
John, there's so many places I could go, but
I want the first thought that comes to mind.
Here's kind of a confession, but I hope this confession will help a lot of dads out there, moms too, but dads in their relationship with their kids. You know, there's I'm remembering, and I wish I could say this only happened once with one child, but it actually happened probably numerous times with each child. There'd be some area, let's say they brought home their report card, and they got an AAA, but oops, there's a C here in math. And instead of really affirming them for all the A's, you know, dad's drilling down on them. What's going on here in math? Why a C? And I'd be, you know, frankly ranting and raving. And then, John, I'd feel this nudge from the Holy Spirit. And that nudge, what it was saying to me is, Petey, you've been blessed with a great kid. You're talking about a C here in math. Other parents are struggling with drug addiction, promiscuity, you know, many other kind of issues. And you're dealing with a C in math, and right now you're making your son feel like a loser. You're making your son feel like you don't love him because he got a C in math. And I would literally call a timeout. Son, Bill, timeout. You know, he's wondering what's going on. And I would just confess, son, I just got this nudge from the Holy Spirit. And I just need to tell you, as your dad, I'm proud of you. I love you. You're a good kid. You've done this and this and this. And even my good, looking at this report card, you got an A here in this course and this course and this course. And I'm ranting and raving here because you got a C in math. Bill, if you're going to work a little harder in math and improve that, that'll be tremendous. But you know what? Your dad wasn't all that good in math either. You've got a lot of strengths. And Bill, you're such a winner, and you're going to be a winner. And so that's a lesson for a parent, is at times just to have that check in your spirit. Are you affirming your kids for all the good things they're doing and thanking God for all the good things they're doing? And then when you are addressing an area of discipline, even if it needs to be addressed, it's in a context of 80%, 90% of what you're doing, son, daughter, is just incredible. We need to visit about this area. But we're visiting in this in the light of all the good things in your life, your good character, your good efforts. And as you would guess, John, they're actually a lot more willing to work harder on that area when they feel like dad thinks I'm a winner versus, man, my dad thinks I'm a loser. That also works with employees. We need the discipline to affirm all the great things they're doing. And yet there's an area that needs to be addressed. And that works so much better than, you know, coming in and ranting and raving on something.
Well, I'm so appreciative that you shared that story and that you took the time to come on the show and share your wisdom and your life experience with us and all of our audience. Where can people find out more about you and what you're doing?
Well, thank you for that question. My blog is leadingwithquestions.com. Just run those words together, leadingwithquestions.com. And there's new posts every Monday and Thursday morning. John, as you know, you've given me permission to, you're going to do one of the guest posts. And actually 80% of the posts on my blog are guest posts. There's a whole other story to that. But the beneficiaries of that are all my subscribers. My blog is followed by leaders in 190 nations. And then I've heard you say too, John, is, you know, many times the guests on your podcast, you know, one of the greatest things is what you've learned from them. And that certainly is true on my blog. It's what I've learned from people like you, John. And then also, there are free resources. I've written two books, John. And the first one is Great Leaders Ask Questions, a Fortune 100 list. And if you go to my blog, you'll see that, and you can click and request the free download of Great Leaders Ask Questions, and you'll have your choice. You can get the free ebook, or you can get a free MP3 audio book. I read the book, and or both. And then there's another resource, 339 Questions Jesus Asked. 339 questions Jesus asked, also available on my blog, leadingwithquestions.com. And people, I kid many people, John, and say, you know, you've already read my second book, 339 questions Jesus asked. And they kind of look at me like, well, no, I've never heard of your book. And you're telling me I've already read it. And I say, well, if you've read the four Gospels, all was went through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and pulled out. And it turns that in the New International Version, it was the version I used, there are 339 questions recorded by the four authors, and I simply compiled them into a book.
Nice.
So, but even if someone's not a follower of Jesus, many believe Jesus to be one of the greatest communicators, if not the greatest communicator in all of human history. And so to improve your skills as a communicator, even if you weren't a follower of Christ, you'd be wise to study the questions he asked. And if you study Jesus as a communicator, John, you discover two things, that he did exceedingly well, or that he focused on in his communication. He told great stories, and he asked great questions. And so if we want to become a great communicator, learn to tell great stories and then ask great questions. And again, whether you're a follower of Christ or not, if you'll focus on those two things, you'll increase your communication skills.
Fantastic. Bob, thank you so much for spending the time and for sharing your wisdom. And I know our audience will be grateful for it. Thank you very much.
John, thank you for the privilege. I'm honored.
Thanks for joining us in another week of the show. If you like this, do me a favor and share it with a colleague or a friend, or leave a comment, review, and recommendation wherever you listen to podcasts. Anything that would help us spread the message of leadership, it would mean a great deal to me in my heart. Until next time, be a good leader at work and at home.